Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. During the breakdown of Western civilization, the breakdown of society, the breakdown of social systems, families, and, as it turns out, the breakdown of young men. 70% of young men aren't grown up by 30 years of age now, from 30% in 1970. And the metric there, according to Newsweek magazine, was that these guys aren't getting jobs. They can't make a living. They can't even provide for themselves, and they're not getting married. So these guys aren't growing up. And here's another article. I think I hit one of these articles every single week from one of the major news sources. As it turns out, it's not just a crazy right-wing fanatic broadcasting from his basement talking about this kind of stuff. Here's another article about the same kind of things we've been talking about. CNN, and they're covering a book that has just been published called The Demise of Guys. Is the overuse of video games and pervasiveness of online porn causing the demise of guys? In fact, just, a day or two ago, I found some other statistics that indicated young men, 18 to 24 years of age, 70% of them are accessing porn on a monthly basis. And that's online. Now, friends, things have changed dramatically in just the last 100 years. If Almanza Wilder had wanted to break the Seventh Commandment, he probably would have had to make it to New York to find a prostitute. But today, things have changed dramatically. I mean, these little boys, it doesn't matter where they are, whether they be in the agricultural rural areas or in the inner cities, they have equal access to all kinds of stuff on the Internet. And they have the opportunity to establish some very, very, very bad habits and ultimately destroy their lives and probably decrease the possibilities of them ever getting married and ever having children or ever having a job or ever having a family or ever providing for that family. Friends, you think we're doing bad right now with 42% of kids born without fathers, up from 6% in 1960. It's going to get way worse. What's going to get way worse? In the next 20 years or so, we are not out of the woods on this one, which means we as dads, as moms, who are still a little bit concerned as to the social and cultural situation around us, we're going to have to find a plan B. We're going to have to find our own way, hopefully a biblical way, to raise our children with a strong biblical character. And that's why I'm bringing Joshua Christensen onto the program with me. He's got some great resources on a website called Proverbs66.com. And he comes to me from Albuquerque, New Mexico, homeschool father of two. They've been homeschooling from the very beginning. Joshua, welcome to the Generations program.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
You bet. Hey, I'm concerned. Are you concerned? The demise of guys. I mean, it's everywhere. People are concerned. You know, and it's not just those public school kids out in the inner city where, you know, everything's all messed up and we got dysfunctional family life everywhere. No, this is the private schools. This is the homeschools. This is the nice little suburban areas where you've got middle-income families raising their kids, and it's just not going good.
Right. Right. No, I'm absolutely concerned. That's my generation, Generation X.
Yeah, I think we're Gen X. I was born in 64, so I just barely made Gen X.
but I'm Gen X. Generation, but we're that MTV generation, yeah. That hyper-stimulation crowd that mom and dad were both working in the workforce and they were gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rise of divorce rates and everything left our generation parentless. Without hope.
Yeah.
And it's without direction, without boundaries, and there's a major call. I mean, that's a lot of what drives me to do the work I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Newsweek article is comparing 2010 to 1970. Okay, so 40 years, and those are effectively the years we grew up.
Right.
And between 1970 and 2010, what they're saying is we fell off the cliff. in terms of guys. Now, girls are still hanging in there, twice as many 23-year-old girls with college degrees as guys, okay? Almost twice as many 23-year-old girls with college degrees as guys. So, I mean, the girls are way ahead. They're way ahead of the game on this one. But I think everybody's hurting because they just haven't received the kind of raising and the kind of character it takes to continue on a civilization, a social system.
Right, right.
So we have to find ways to do this. And, of course, the social ties into the economic, and I know your focus is the economic, but ultimately it's got to be parents that are inculcating these values, these principles we find in the book of Proverbs, into the lives of their children.
Right. Well, fathers were such an important role.
Yeah.
And raising children throughout the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And when fathers over the last 30, 40 years have just kind of disappeared from the scene, you turn on any evening sitcom, and the father's always the butt of all jokes. So it's no wonder that men have kind of lost focus.
Hmm.
We've given this rise to equality, which is, I have no problem with equality in the workplace or anything like that. However, it has hurt the family unit, and it has hurt the next generation that we're raising.
I think we have two issues with the raising of children. Number one, content. Number two, methodology.
Right.
Content, meaning we got to get the right content, and I like the fact you start with the Book of Proverbs. I do the same thing on the radio show all the time, just encouraging folks to get our family Bible study guide through the entire Book of Proverbs and just really inculcate the content of the Book of Proverbs and, of course, the whole Word of God. But secondly, I think you've got to take the time. You know, a mom has got to take the time. I mean, you teach these things as you walk by the way, as you rise up, as you lie down, and it's just not going to happen in 10 minutes. I don't know, did it work for your kids in 10 minutes?
Oh, 7 at least.
Yeah.
They
were geniuses. They picked up on it right away.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, and I appreciate that you use, you know, when you walk down the street, when you're lying down, because, you know, Deuteronomy 6, that's the father's role, mm-hmm. is to teach our children diligently, to impress upon our children. Mm-hmm. And that's gone by the wayside.
Yeah. Here's a U.S. News and World Report article my dad sent to me about a day or two ago. And let me run this one by it as well. Folks, with Joshua Christensen from Proverbs66.com. And Joshua, here's the article. It's very interesting. How to graduate from college and go precisely nowhere. That's the title of the article. And this kind of stuff appeals to me because, you know what? We have got to get out of the box when it comes to higher education. I mean, you can't just dump your kid in college for 4 years and expect, voila, everything turns out right in 4 years. I think that's a major problem. And you know what? I'm not the only guy saying this. This is U.S. News and World Report talking about the very same thing we've been talking about. They say of 2 million new college grads about to join the workforce, for many of the prospects are discouraging. The unemployment rate for 20 to 24-year-olds, 13%, more than 5% higher than the overall rate. My understanding is it's closer to 50% for those who are trying to get a job in their career for which they were preparing. He says, if there's a bright side to this bleak picture, it's that many recent grads doomed their own career prospects through arrogance, laziness, or unrealistic expectations. A recent survey of hiring managers by the Center for Professional Excellence at York College of Pennsylvania found that 40% of young job applicants show up dressed inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you can just get your pants on straight, you're ahead of 40%. 29% are late for the interviews. So, you know, work your clock, you know, get your clock set right. And try to remember to leave an hour earlier than you need to. And then more than 11% send text messages or use their phones during the interview.
So
one more thing. Try to avoid text messaging during the interview.
Wow.
Isn't that horrible?
That we would even have to bring that up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Incredible. So this is your competition.
I was talking with a youth minister from a good friend of ours, a youth minister at one of the local churches here in Albuquerque. And we're over at their house over the weekend, and he was telling us that they've had issues with a lot of their kids that they're dealing with within church.
Yeah.
Within worship,
mm-hmm.
and trying to hold them accountable not to text.
Wow. Just
and the
during
parents
church.
Are getting upset about it.
Okay.
Why are you telling my kid not, you know?
Yeah.
It blows me away.
That's craziness.
I wouldn't even begin to imagine that they're doing it during job interviews.
Yeah. That's crazy. And I think that your young people today just aren't prepared. They just don't have the character. They don't understand what it is to be rude and what it is to be polite. They don't understand the very, very, very basics of how to function in society, which is really funny because, you know, the old accusation towards homeschooling was, you guys are unsocialized.
Right.
Hey, let me tell you something, folks. It's unsocialized to text message during a job interview, okay? Evidently, somebody's not been socialized properly there. But, you know, Joshua, I think one of the encouraging things from this article is that our children are actually, if they just get the very, very, very basics, they're going to make it in the economy. You know, when I came stateside, I was homeschooled back in the 60s and 70s, and I started out in the job market in 1981, okay? Now, this was the worst recession until 2008, okay? So it was a tough time. But I had 5 jobs at a time.
Right.
You know, I never had trouble getting work.
Right.
I'd walk into an interview and I'd almost always walk away with a job. And I think it was because I was prepared for the interview. And, you know, my parents taught me decent character. And character goes a long way when it comes to the economy. Believe it or not, it will stand you in good stead. If you're lazy, slothful, and you don't respect authority, probably not the best employee.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I agree completely.
So, well, anyway, just a couple other things from this story from U.S. News and World Report. Here's six crucial mistakes that can scotch the career prospects of young workers. Number one, assume your learning is complete. You know, he says, you do that, you're going to be in trouble.
No.
And boy, is that true today. You know, you got to keep learning to keep up with the market, don't you?
Absolutely. I saw a study a few years back. I don't remember what the study was, but it basically was referring to how 20 years after people graduated from college, the average person had read less than 5 books.
No way.
If they didn't go to college, the average person read no books or less than 1 book from high school graduation up to that 20-year point.
Wow.
And I mean, and that
wow,
novels,
in 20
that included
years.
Fiction, that included everything.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't know how they function in the economy, especially with the changing technology. I mean, think about computer science and all the online stuff. You know, if you're not up to speed with some of the changes going on, if you're not getting some of the latest technology and updates in technology, and if you're not learning where things are going, you're probably going to be obsolete. Whatever you are, whatever you're prepared to do will be obsolete in the next 10 years.
10 years is optimistic.
You think so?
I think so. Huh. I think so. I mean, you buy a new computer and it's obsolete in 6 months.
Wow.
So I think if you're not keeping up with things, you're obsolete in 6 months to a year.
Hmm. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, just a couple things here from this U.S. News story. How to make a lot of mistakes in preparing for your career or for the economy out there. Assume your learning is complete, number one. That is, you know, knock off 4 years of college and then stop reading books for the next 5 years. And you will not be ready for the economy that's out there. Our children need to be readers. Leaders are readers. And if they're going to be involved in the economy and they're going to be up to speed and they're going to be able to contribute to the economy, they should be reading. Okay, number two, wait for others to shape your career. Number three, limit your networking to Facebook. Boy, that's a problem. If all you're doing is networking on Facebook, you're probably not really connecting with the people who are the movers and shakers in the economy. There are, of course, other ways to network. And according to these guys, you got to do the face-to-face. And I agree with that, don't you? You got to get to know people.
Well, it's the old eyeball-to-eyeball, belly-to-belly
yeah.
conversations.
You do. One of the things I've noticed with the young men that we've mentored over the years is the way that they've become successful is just all the relationships that they establish in all the experiences that they have as they travel with me. They typically are able to take a piece out of the economy only because they're networking in the economy. They're in it. They're working within it. Now, maybe not making a lot of money from the get-go, but as they begin to do stuff in the economy, people begin to recognize their talents, and they realize, hey, these guys can do something for me. So they move $400 or $500 their direction, and voila, they've got some contract work.
Mm-hmm.
So that networking is really, really critical. In fact, even for me, you know, the way I got my first job out of college, even in 1986, was the fact that I had gotten to know this hiring manager from this company up in Santa Barbara, California, over a period of about a year. And I had so many lunches with him, and we just got to be friends. It was amazing. It turns out, you know, this is the funny thing. He was a homeschooling dad in 1986. His name was David Swanson.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea what happened to him. But, you know, David Swanson, Kevin Swanson, he was a homeschooling dad. I'd been a homeschool graduate in 1986. I was student body president at university. And we just hit it off, and we became good friends.
I bet you'll find him on Facebook.
I probably could, yeah. But it was, you know, again, networking. It was
right.
Ultimately networking. He was a friend. And
right.
He got me a job at this place called Applied Magnetics Corporation in Santa Barbara. And the reason I got the job, now I had lots of interviews, of course, but the reason I got that job, I really wanted the job, was because of the contact, the eyeball-to-eyeball contact I had with somebody who was already in the market.
We do property flipping.
Yeah.
And I invest in real estate.
Okay.
You talk about a place where you have to network.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You have to know people. You've got to know who has money, who's a buyer, who's a seller, where are you going to find the deals. you know, and networking is such a skill that's not taught. And it's such an important piece to the whole economic formula.
Wow. You know, that's a funny thing you mentioned that because, yeah, it's hardly ever taught. Any college, I suppose there might be a business major out there that does it, but doesn't everybody need to network?
I know a lot of business majors that clam up as soon as they walk in a room.
That's too bad.
I was talking to a professional coach about a year and a half ago, and he always talked about how the males walk in the room, and you can always tell the peacocks because their chest puff out, and they walk around the room, and what do you do? What do you do? And then they find somebody that they know, and they immediately gravitate to that person, and they don't meet anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
then
so
that's
true.
That's a recipe for disaster if you really want to grow your circle of influence and your business. Well, here's two more points. In order to be profoundly unsuccessful in the marketplace today, he says you've got to limit your networking, but also turn down offers that seem beneath you, and then make sure you're very comfortable wherever you happen to be. And I think that kind of ties into what you just said. Is, you know, if you just want to be comfortable and you don't want to work any job that's sort of beneath you, you're probably not going to get a job.
Yeah, there's another rule that I teach, and especially when I'm talking with teens.
Yeah.
A lot of them, comfort is their whole world.
Yeah.
And they're scared to come out of their shell and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I make them draw a circle on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And right in the center of the circle, I tell them to put a dot, and I said, that represents you. Now, inside that circle, put a bunch of little dots all over inside that circle. That represents everything that you currently have. Now, outside the circle, put a bunch of dots. They represent everything you don't have that you want. Guess what? The circle itself represents your comfort zone, and if you want those things, you better get really comfortable being uncomfortable in life.
Exactly. Get used to it.
Get used to it, because everything you want is outside your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you'd already have it.
Kind of ties into the proverb, the slugger doesn't plow his fields because there's a lion in the streets. And the lions are very uncomfortable. They, you know, they don't make life very easy for you.
Right.
And nobody really wants to deal with the lions. But I'm sorry, but that's, you know, about 85% of success out there. You're going to have to go and get your .44 and put a bullet through the head of that lion and move off and, you know, plow some fields. But people, you know, these young people, sometimes they just don't want to do that. And I think it ties into your Proverbs 6:6 principle. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it ties into the fact that one of the most fundamental sins, and we'll just call it a sin because it's a sin, most fundamental sins out there is spiritual and financial and physical sluggardly.
Right.
Yes.
One of the biggest principles I've been working with my girls, my girls are 12 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the biggest principles in the last year and a half that I've noticed and picked up on is this idea of laziness versus diligence.
Yeah.
And I've made them write reports on the difference between the two, give me examples, and when we're having disciplinary moments, I ask them, now, was that an example of laziness or diligence? Which one do you think God honors more?
Hmm.
Or which honors God more? And it's a very real issue that has to be addressed. And if within the home, if we're not discipling our children and teaching them at a young age, God only gave us so much time with them, and the world is not going to be kind to them.
Yeah.
And I think we have to teach those things.
We need to remind our children all the way back from before the creation, God created us for dominion work.
Right.
And it's sort of like, imagine if, you know, I bought a brand new Toyota Camry, spent $26,000 on the car. The car turns to me and says, oh, by the way, I don't go anywhere. You know, think about that. What am I going to say to the car? Now, wait a minute. I spent $26,000 on you, and I want you to go places. Because that's
the old Mazda,
what you're made
the
to
Mazda
do.
The Mazda ad doesn't work after that. Vroom, vroom.
Yeah.
There isn't any.
Yeah, exactly. There's no vroom, vroom.
Right.
There's no car, okay? We're not even going to, you know, smash you down in a junkyard somewhere, and we're going to start all over.
Well,
if you don't
go,
and there's no vroom, vroom, there ain't no car.
I'm down here in New Mexico, and one of our big jokes is, you know what, Nova means in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
It's Nova. It doesn't go.
No, the Nova Novas.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, if the cars are made to go, God has made us for work, and we need to remind our children of that.
Right.
That God created those hands for something, son.
Right.
God created that brain for something, to do stuff. and to do stuff to honor me and to take good dominion of my earth. And we just remind our children of that, and that's so important. I appreciate the sorts of things that you're doing as well. Hey, let's hit this one more issue, and that is, you know, the arrogance of saying, hey, none of this work is really, you know, up where I am. In other words, the job that someone is providing for me is below my standards, and I think we need to remind our children that they have to be faithful in small things.
I'll share a quick story about that. I made my living in the mortgage business for quite a few years.
Okay.
And when the markets crashed a few years back, I found myself with about a third of the income that we were used to and still had some expenses. And I went down and I took a job delivering pizza at night. And for the first 2 weeks that I was delivering pizza, I was incredibly angry.
Okay.
I was incredibly angry because literally I had the attitude that it was beneath me.
Yeah.
I mean, I prayed, God, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm better than this. I was so angry for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And throwing the pizzas at people didn't really yield much of a tip either.
No, they don't like the pie in the face.
Yeah.
So there was one night in particular that I went up to a door. I delivered the pizza. It was a young boy that answered the door. He gives me a tip, and it's a handful of change.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was angry, and I wasn't real happy that I was there doing this. I went back to the car, and when I sat down, it was 6 50-cent pieces, and tears streamed from my face.
Mm-hmm.
There was some significance to those 50-cent pieces, because years before, when I was in college, I was working as a waiter, and every time I got a 50-cent piece as a tip, I saved it, and I have a jar with 6 50-cent pieces in that jar. And I always save them to remind me that I'm not beneath hard work.
Wow.
And
wow.
God hit me between the eyes that night,
mm-hmm.
when I was so angry because I took a job that was beneath me.
Yeah. And he said, this is what I'm giving you.
Exactly.
So he wants
exactly.
you to be grateful.
It was perfect.
Wow.
It was so perfect.
Wow. God
yeah.
talks to us in weird ways.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, let's just take a moment, Joshua, and talk about your curriculum. I realize we've been talking about a lot of what's going on out there, and you know what? What I think is amazing is that what we talk about on this radio program, the kinds of things the Word of God brings out, are precisely the lessons that the world around us needs.
Right.
I mean, this is, you know, God's Word speaks. And we got to get back to the principles of God's Word and inculcate these principles into the life of our children. And I know that's the interest that you've taken. You're looking at the book of Proverbs and you're saying, what does the book of Proverbs have to say to us about money, about work, about these issues? And why don't you tell us a little bit about the project?
Well, I really appreciate what you're saying about, I mean, everything that we've talked about, how guys are getting distracted on the internet, how we are not reading anymore. And we're not being prepared. We're not being shepherded. We've lost character. A lot of people are afraid of the idea of money. I mean, I've counseled people for years, inside the church and outside the church, within my profession, that are just terrified. I'm not good at finances. They're terrified of it. And what's amazing to me is that money is more about character, and dealing with our finances is a lot more about character than it has anything to do with numbers.
So God is testing our character.
100%.
Through money.
Absolutely. Think about this. The second part of Proverbs 6, I mean, we always say, go to the ant, consider his ways, and be wise.
Mm-hmm.
But the second part of it says, it has no commander, no overseer or ruler,
mm-hmm.
yet it stores its provisions in summer and it gathers its food at harvest. Nobody is telling them to get up and be on time for the interview.
Yeah.
No one is telling them, stop texting.
Uh-huh.
There's no commander. There's no overseer. These are self-starters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to be self-starters. We have to be engaged in the process. We have to be completely alert to what's going on around us. Because nobody, like the article, I think Newsweek, you said, one of the fastest ways to kill it is to not improve, to not get better,
mm-hmm.
and to expect somebody else to do it for you. Guess what? The ant does it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else is going to store up the provision for you. If you sit around and you wait for somebody to give you a job, the ideal perfect job, it is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking at an economy like this, we're sitting in a time right now. You referred to the late 70s, early 80s when you were starting work.
Yeah.
You had five jobs.
Yeah.
We're sitting in an economy right now. We're not going to go back to where we were 5 or even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Our economy is shifting and it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
The entire economic model of the way the world works is changing.
Yeah.
And it is going to be different 5 or 10 years from now. We're not going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't grasp what is happening and they don't understand how to be self-sufficient and how to take what God has placed inside of us, created in His image, award and goes forward and conquers everything, if we sit around as slackers, as sluggards, however you want to put it, and we wait for somebody else to do it for us, we will get left behind.
Hmm.
And there's a reckoning that's coming.
Hmm.
And it's not pretty. And there's a lot of people that are unemployed and underemployed right now. And if they're not willing to get out and do the hard things and make changes and create their own way and trust in God's provision, economics don't matter.
Yeah, and I don't think the socialist state's going to save you.
No.
You know, people want to count on that that socialist program, but you know, the government's doing as bad or worse than the rest of the economy right now, and I think people really need to take heed to the lessons that you're talking about here, Joshua. Quickly, you talk about stewardship.
Yep.
I know that's a big part of your program.
There's
How does stewardship
keys.
Tie into diligence?
All right, so there's three keys.
Okay.
There's three keys that I talk about. The first thing is stewardship. Tying stewardship into diligence. If you're not diligent about taking tracking your numbers, knowing how much money is coming in and how much money is going out, what you're spending it on,
mm-hmm.
then the rest of it's irrelevant.
Wow.
So you have to be diligent about tracking your spending
mm-hmm.
and knowing exactly what you're doing with the money coming in. Because right now, with national savings rates at all-time lows and people are spending more money than's coming in because of the ease of credit,
mm-hmm.
that's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so being diligent about your numbers and knowing what you have to spend and what you don't have to spend and what you're spending it on is really important.
So before you even think about income and getting a job and working the economy, you need to be as interested as in expenses as
Absolutely.
You are in the income column.
Absolutely. My wife and I currently have a goal, and this is so un-American. This is so anti what everybody is doing right
mm-hmm.
now. We have a personal goal to have our household expenses with a family of less than $1,000 a month.
Wow.
That's our
great.
Personal goal.
That's great.
And we're halfway there. We are almost there.
Okay.
And, you know, the next thing is we got to get the house paid off.
And boy, tremendous goals. Paying
Huge.
Off the house, getting out of debt.
Absolutely.
And reducing the dependence upon the spend model. Important for Americans today.
Right.
It's really, really important.
Right.
Because I think a lot of Americans are addicted to spending. They just want to spend and spend and spend. In fact, I recommend occasional fasts on spending.
If you look at personal finance, just go out to money.com or Kiplinger's or any of the major sites and pull down their personal finance section. 99% of what is in the personal finance section has to do with debt. It has to do with how to manage debt, how to get a mortgage, how to refinance your mortgage, how to buy a car, how to credit cards and all those things. That's personal finance. It's all about debt management. And to me, that is all about sin management, because we're not supposed to be in debt.
Yeah.
And
the goal
it's the fastest way to slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus says you can't serve both God and money.
Yeah.
You're going to serve one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if we follow the rules of the world is teaching us about debt, we're not serving God.
Mm.
We're serving money.
Yeah.
Every hour we work is about money. So we get through the stewardship piece, and we move into the second phase of fiscal stewardship that we teach of increase.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we get into, okay, now that you understand how to track the money, you need to increase the money coming in.
Yeah.
Compound interest, Rule 72, investing in real estate, investing in positive cash flow property or businesses, business entities, things like that.
Mm.
You know, and making things grow.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it said a few years ago that if trees were like human beings, they would only grow to be about 6 feet tall. Because we place so many limits on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And God created everything in nature to multiply, to grow, to increase. And so, and he talks all throughout the Old Testament about prospering us. And when we follow wisdom and we follow and we discern and we're prudent in our ways, we will prosper.
So the first lesson is stewardship. Second is increase. What's
exactly.
the third step in the program?
The third step and the final step is legacy.
Okay.
What exactly are you going to give back? What are you going to be remembered for? You know, what are you going to leave for the next generation behind you? Oral tradition and, you know, the Proverbs talk about, you know, a wise man leaves an inheritance to his children's children.
Hmm.
And so there's that whole piece. Then we talk about tithe and philanthropy, mm-hmm. and that's our legacy.
Hmm.
And if you look at the parable of the talents, it all starts over. The whole cycle starts over again. So because, well done, good and faithful servant, you were faithful with a little, I'm going to give you more.
And it just continues.
And it just continues. Mm-hmm. If at any point in the cycle, we break it, if we decide not to increase, if we decide not to grow our knowledge or that stuff, if we decide not to give back, mm-hmm. if we decide not to manage it well, it all breaks down.
And what a shame. What a shame that there are some kids, like I'm thinking the Paris Hiltons of the world, that take their parents' legacy or their grandparents' legacy and just burn it into the ground. And that, of course, happens so very, very often. I read somewhere that that family businesses are really the best businesses that have hung in there through some of the worst recessions possible. But the very worst thing that can happen to family businesses is when they pass it on to their children who run it into the ground because they're not willing to grow it. They're not willing to increase it. They don't take good stewardship of the things that they have been given. And as a result, they destroy some of these family economies, and I think what we need to teach our children is they have a responsibility to take the things that we have given them, the work that we have done, and the character, hopefully, that we pass on to them, and just continue to multiply that.
Well, you look at, I don't know if you've heard of Warren Buffett's dynastic wealth plan.
Yeah, I think I've heard a little bit about it. Yeah, he's not handing much to his kids.
Anything from him.
Yeah.
They're not going to get a dime from him.
Which is really sad.
But what he taught them was how to build it themselves.
Yeah.
You know,
but they should hopefully build something upon what their parents gave to them.
Right.
If they can.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Joshua, I appreciate this stuff you've been sharing with us, and you will be at the CHECK conference coming up here.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be up there December 14th through the 16th in Denver.
Right, coming up June 14th to 16th at the Denver Merchandise Mart. This is our gigantic family conference, the Christian Home Educators Conference here in Colorado, coming up June 14th to the 16th. Join thousands and thousands of homeschooling parents as they hear about all aspects of raising families, including family finances and money for teens. And you have a book out called Money for Teens. Is that correct?
The Money Book for Teens.
Okay. The Money Book for Teens, and these resources, folks, available at Proverbs66.com on the Internet. And if you'd like to meet with Joshua, he will be at our CHECK conference coming up here in just a couple of weeks at the Denver Merchandise Mart, June 14th to the 16th. And by the way, to register for that conference, it's CHECK.org on the web. That's CHEC.org. Joshua, thanks so much. We'll look forward to meeting for the first time as you come up to Denver.
I look forward to it.
And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast as we continue to lay out a vision for the next generation during, I think, a very, very crucial time in Western history. And friends, I don't think there's ever been more of an opportunity to address challenges that face us socially, economically, financially, politically, you name it. We address these things on this radio program from the perspective of homeschooling fathers who care, who really care about the future. We're not just politicos with attitudes and perspectives. We're not just lawyers. We're not just psychologists. We're fathers who care about the future of our children and grandchildren. And if you get behind our vision on this program, then let me give you an opportunity to get behind it in a real way. We're looking at, financial support for this program as well. So if you have a little extra to provide for a charitable cause and you'd like to keep this vision on the air day to day, for those tens of thousands of people that download this program in 50 states around America and over 100 countries around the world, if you think this vision is important to the future of our nation, the future of faith, family, and freedom in this nation and others, get behind the program by funding our program. Again, we're looking for 100 supporters for this program. We're up to something like 35 or 36. Hopefully by the end of May, we'll be getting close to our goal of 100 supporters for the Generations Radio broadcast. To support this program, go to our website and hit donate today. Just go to our website, generationswithvision.com or generationsradio.com, and support the program today. That's generationsradio.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family is coming to the Denver Merchandise Mart June 14 to 16. This conference, sponsored by Christian Home Educators of Colorado, is designed to encourage and equip families through seminars on home education, family discipleship, worldview, vision, and parenting. Visit the exhibit hall featuring 200 vendors, including youth entrepreneurs. Stop by the used curriculum sale. Bring the whole family Friday night for the family film night featuring works by award-winning Christian filmmakers. Come to the Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family, June 14 to 16. Register today. Save on pre-conference pricing. For more information, go to check.org. That's CHEC.org.